Okay, we ended with a question last week, which I want to answer tonight. And ask a few more questions on it and give some other answers also. We asked if what we've said up until now, in tens of different ways, the same idea, that everything really is for the good. No matter if it's caused directly by HaKadosh Baruch Hu or seemingly caused by human beings, because ultimately nothing happens in this world that HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't want to happen. And everything is therefore for the good, because kol mada'ovid min shmaya l'tavavid, kol ka'ovid rachmana l'tavavid. Everything that Rabban Hashem does or lets happen is good. And the only thing is that we don't see the whole picture, so we don't see it as good. It's good, but we can't really see it. And then the final analysis, when we'll see the whole picture, we'll see that everything's for the good. Then why, when things that appear to be bad happen, why do we daven that they should change? And we gave the marshal of the person in the hospital who desperately needs an operation that will save his life and give him 50 happy, healthy years. And without the operation, he definitely will die. And the person not really appreciating how important the operation is afraid of the pain, and he begs the doctor not to give him the operation. Any decent doctor is not going to listen to the patient. He's going to give him the operation, give him the pain, because he knows that that's what's best for him. So why do we bother to daven? Right? Why don't we say, look, God, I may not see it, but I really believe that this is for the good. Thank you for making me sick, and I hope that when I won't have to be sick, you'll make me well. And even if we're not that smart, and we shepherd the Rabbanu Shalom with tremendous tefillahs, why does he listen to us? To do something that he knows is not in our best interest, just because we don't realize it. So if in fact everything is really good, except we don't see it, then why do we daven? And why does the Rabbanu Shalom listen to our davening? That was the question we ended with last week. So we're going to give a few different answers. The first answer is that the marshal that we gave with the person with the operation is not a good marshal. Has to be changed, okay, altered. And the marshal that would fit the situation of davening would be the following one. Patient, again, is sick. He needs an operation desperately. And if he gets the operation, he'll live another happy, healthy 50 years. Doesn't get the operation, he'll die. But the doctor says that the only reason he needs that operation and there's no other way of curing him is because his body is very weak. And therefore, there's medicine that could help him, but his body is too weak to integrate the medicine. So therefore, he needs this very intense kind of operation because the slow method of the medicine, his body is not up to integrating the medicine. So it won't work fast enough, or it won't integrate fast, whatever it is. It doesn't do with medicine, it's just my muscle. And if he would only exercise and strengthen himself, then he wouldn't need the operation to survive and get the extra happy, healthy 50 years. He'd be able to take some bitter medicine, much less painful, and he'd be able to have the same happy, healthy 50 years. And the doctor says that if he'd be able to really strengthen his body even more, then there's a sweet medicine that he could give him, and that would give him the same happy, healthy 50 years. Now, if the person exercises and he strengthens himself and the doctor comes back in an hour and re-examines him, and now he says, I'm not going to give him the operation anymore. His body is strong enough to take the bitter medicine. He comes back in another half hour and the guy is really exercising and he's really strong. He says, I'm not giving him the bitter medicine. Send up for the sweet medicine. The doctor hasn't changed his mind. The patient's changed his condition. In condition A, the doctor always knew that if condition A exists, the patient needs an operation. There's no other way. Condition B, he needs bitter medicine. Condition C, he needs sweet medicine. What happened is that the patient changed his condition. Similarly, the Rebbe Moshe doesn't change his mind and decide to do something that's not good for us because we bother him. But davening changes the person's condition. Hispalel is hispoel. It's reflexive. It refers to what you do to yourself, not what you do to somebody else. It's not that you're davening to Hashem to change his mind. But your davening changes the situation, changes you. And because of that, it changes what's good for you. Under condition A, what's good for that person is an operation because of his condition. Under condition B, an operation is not good for him. It's not necessary. What's good for him is bitter medicine. In condition C, the bitter medicine is not good for him. Not necessary. Now the sweet medicine. Everything in this world is for the good. But based on the person's condition, and since we have free choice, we can change our condition. And therefore, it's good, but it's not necessarily sweet. And that's why on Rosh Hashanah, we wish each other a Shana Tova Umesuka. Because every year is a good year. No matter how bad it is, it's good. But it's not sweet. So we want that the good should come in a sweet way. Shouldn't come in a bitter way. But if we need it, we're sick spiritually, and we don't have the strength to get the good in another way, in a sweeter way, then getting it in the most bitter way is still good in the long run. So when we daven, we don't change HaKadosh Baruch Hu's mind. We change our condition. And davening is only one out of many, possibilities. And it's not, guaranteed cause and effect. It may change the condition enough, it may not. It may be that the condition needs something else or doesn't depend on changing. This is what's really best for the person under all conditions. We don't know. And therefore, sometimes the Rebbe Shalom says no. More than that, it's not that he says no. It's just that this wasn't enough to change the condition, right, to not necessitate what we see as bad as being the only good. And also there's other factors. Learning Torah, doing mitzvahs, chesed, tzedakah, mishana makom, mishana shame, changing your name, changing your place. Anything that could change the condition of the person is significant when it comes to davening. How do we change our condition? So that's not for here. That's for a shiur on davening, how it works. But ultimately, bottom line, it doesn't change God's name, mind. It doesn't change his decision. It changes the condition in some way, and when the condition changes, what's good changes. Okay, is that clear enough? Okay. But you should ask me a very strong question on this. If that's true, then there should be something that bothers you. Anybody? Yeah?
Sometimes, you know, you hear people say, you know, I was davening for this, and like Hashem gave it to me. And all of a sudden, it's like, does that mean like the person who feels they got what they were asking for, Hashem loves them more than the person who also felt they were davening with such kavana, and the situation?
No, basically, it's not that you convinced God to give you something that he didn't want to give you before, but whatever was needed for you to have that thing in a way that would be positive, you accomplished. So you accomplished something. Somebody else, it wasn't a positive thing for him, even if he davened for it. So he didn't get it.
It's only like what you call a win-win situation.
Right, exactly. If you don't get it, but it's not win-win because if you get it in a way that's not so sweet, you have to suffer for it. Yeah, and it'd be better not to have to suffer. It'd be better to have it in a sweet way.
But there may be a reason why.
Yeah, 100%. In the end, what's good happens, but what's good is fluid. Depending on what you need for your good. And again, sometimes that need can be very sweet, and sometimes that need can be very bitter.
Could it be that somebody is sick, and let's say 150 people are dying, the individual, and the person doesn't get better? Could it be that one more person would have tipped the scales and...
Before we go to that, you're already one step ahead of me, but you should ask a more fundamental question. How does other people daven for you?
How
do other people daven for people? Right? If davening doesn't change God's mind, it changes the condition of the person. Let's go back to the hospital. And you have Reuven, who's sick in bed, needs this operation. And Shimon is standing by the bed when the doctor comes to examine him. And he hears the doctor say, it's a shame that this Reuven is so weak. Because if he would be a little bit stronger, if he just could exercise a little bit, we could get away with some bitter medicine or sweet medicine and not the operation. And I hear this, and I say to the doctor, Doc, look, this guy is really weak. He's not exercising. He can't even move his fingers. But I'm his best friend. I'm going home. I have a gym in my house. I'm going to exercise for him. Right? So don't give him the operation. Right? I promise you, for the next hour, I exercise in his honor, for his merit. Right? So don't give him the operation. I'm exercising for him. How does that help? You can't exercise for somebody else. You can't change somebody else's condition. So how does it work?
That's not the right question.
What? Why not?
Marcus, say the doctor said when he said that the patient needs to like rub an ointment on his arm, and the guy says, so I'll put the ointment on. Still, the davening still can help somebody
how?
Change the condition.
How? But you're not, you have no connection to that person. Let's say you don't even know who the person is.
The rub said he's not going to help davening even for oneself if that helps, but it's the same way.
I mean, however davening helps, it can help for somebody. Yeah, but how? That's the question. How? How does it help somebody else? Lamaisa, according to the marshal, right, that it's like an exercise. It's like something that changes a person's condition. Usually, you can only change your own condition. How do you change somebody else's condition?
Even
spiritually, how can I change somebody else's condition? How does that work? How do you give somebody else's force? Okay. We'll see two ways, and what David is saying is not off base. It's just that I have to go into a much deeper understanding of how tefillah works to make what David's saying understandable. And we're not going to go into that, but there's two ways that what both of you represented in what you said that we will see because it's a little bit easier to understand on a very shallow level.
So call yourself.
Okay, that's exactly what we're going to say. If you remember, I told you a story last week that had no shaykhus to what we were talking about last week. Now it has shaykhus. This is where the story applies, and I got to make sure I make the right story this week. I will repeat the story, but you'll see it has connection to what we're talking about tonight. It had no connection to last week. The story was with one of my children who couldn't take pills, and he had an infection on his toe, and the doctor said that the pill had to be taken in solid form. So he said, I don't mind if you put the pill on my toe. Why are you bothering my mouth if my toe is infected? What does my mouth have to do with my toe? The answer is very simple. It's not your toe and your mouth, it's you. And what goes into your mouth has an effect on your entire system, eventually goes into your blood system, eventually gets to the toe, and has an effect on it. Kol Yisrael Arevim Zebazeh. Kol Yisrael Arevim Zebazeh does not mean all Jews are responsible one for the other. It means that also. But it means something much more essential. Arevim means mixed together. If it would just mean responsible, then it would say Arevim Zebazeh. They are responsible one for the other. Arevim ze baze means they are intertwined one with the other. We are all one neshama, with different bodies. And therefore, what affects me, if I change, it affects you too, indirectly. Because we're all one organism. And any change in a part of the organism is a change in the whole. Okay, now obviously, a change in me, more directly, is much more potent than the indirect change that I can do in you. But Lamaisa, it works like that. And therefore, like we said, it's not cause and effect. You daven, and you get what you want. You daven, and the condition changes. It's one possible, factor. There are many other factors, and davening may not be the factor that can help. May not be enough. May not be the right kind of thing for this specific thing. You may need something else for that. But it helps something. It may not change the condition enough to change it that what you want to change will change it. But it may have a different effect. It may have an effect for other people because since it's a change in the whole system, so somebody else in the system may benefit from it. Right? I think I've mentioned the story here of my Rosh Hashiva's wife, Abara Sarovskin, when he was in his last 2 weeks of life, dying of cancer. So the girls, she was the Menahelis in Yavne High School in Cleveland, girls' school. And the girls volunteered to make 24-hour mishmarot, what's it called?
Shifts
for Saint Tehillim. They said Tehillim around the clock, every day, every night, that he should get better. And they did this for 2 weeks, and then he died. So the Rebbetzin called them together during Shiva, and she said, you probably think that your tefillahs went unanswered and accomplished nothing. You put in all this effort, 24 hours a day in shifts, and my husband died. She said, not true. The tefillahs affected something. They affect Klal Yisrael. Maybe they saved somebody else's life. Maybe they helped my husband's neshama. They didn't make the change that we would have liked to see, but they made some change. They accomplished something. And I found that what she said, the Maril Diskin, somebody showed me when I said this over somewhere, not here, showed me a Maril Diskin that says the exact same thing. He asked a question like this. Avraham Avinu davened for Sodom. Right, long davening. Avraham Avinu had better things to do. Okay, the Rabbanu Shel Olam let him waste his time. And he knew where he was going. 50 tzaddikim, 45, 40, 30, 20, 10. Why didn't God say, look, Avram, I know already that there's not even 10 tzaddikim. I know where you're going. It's not going to help. Go do something. Right? Go sit and learn. Right? Go do some chesed for somebody. Because this davening is a waste of time. It's not gonna accomplish anything. I know the people of Sodom have no merit. I'm going to kill them. So why are you wasting your time? Why did he let him waste his time? Says the Maral Diskin, because Enochinami, Avraham Avinu's tefillahs didn't help for the people of Sodom, but they became a reservoir of power for Klal Yisrael for all generations. And we have the benefits from those tefillahs still today. That's what he says. So, again, it's not so infantile. You daven and you get what you want. Right? It's change. It's a change in you. It's a change in the whole system that you're part of Klal Yisrael. Now, the only thing is that you have to say that if that's the case, then why do you have to direct the tefillah towards somebody and mention his name or whatever? It should be enough just to daven and whatever the change will be. But there is some way that you can make changes that are designated to certain parts of the body, just like you can take medicines that go specifically directly towards that part of the body. Even though you're taking your mouth, it's directed. There's ways of directing things that they with different kind of chemicals to bypass certain systems and go to other systems. There is such a thing. So by mentioning the name and having kavana, it more or less has that effect on this part of me and not this part of me. And therefore I can direct it towards somebody. So that's one way of understanding how you can daven for other people. If davening doesn't change God's mind, it changes the person who's davening's condition, it still can help and change other people's condition because everybody's intertwined. That's one way. The second way is a little bit more complicated, and that's what Gary was referring to. In order to understand the second way, this is something the Michtam Eliyahu says also by Avraham Avinu, how his tefillahs could have helped for Sodom. And I'll try to capsulize it. There's a vort from, I think it's Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. I've seen it quoted in the name of the Chafetz Chaim, but I think it precedes him with Rabbi Yisrael Salanter. He asked the following question. It says, Hatsur tamim pa'alo, kichol drachav mishpat, el emuna vein, avel tzadik v'yoshevu. God is perfect, because all his ways are just. So they ask, Lechara, all people have to be just. We have tzedek tirdo. We have to do justice. So what is so special that God is just in all his ways when people have a responsibility to be just in all their ways too? What's so special about the Rabbanu Shalom? Kichol drachav nishpat. So what he says basically is the following. I'll give you another mashal. Let's take a guy frum guy, married to a frum woman, has frum children, right? Shomer Shabbos, very fine guy, except he has a little quirk in his personality. He works in a factory, very, very fine worker, and on his lunch hour, sometimes he gets bored. And computer games don't do it for him, right? Nor does going to a gym and exercising. The only thing that really takes him out of his boredom, and he's addicted to it, is shooting men, women, and children dead. He doesn't ever kill frum people, or even Jews. He goes into the local McDonald's and shoots up the place. And that's how he gets his relaxation, right? That's how he's able to not be bored. And he does this a few times and doesn't get caught. And finally, they catch him. They bring him to court, and they say to him, you regret what you did. You killed 340 innocent people. Right? Do you regret it? He said, no, it was rather fun. Would you do it again? Yeah, if I get bored, right? Why not? He's a person who has no regrets. He's a cold-blooded murderer, except for a few crazy people in the ACLU. Right? No one would think that this person shouldn't get the death penalty. Why should he be a burden on society, let it be a deterrent to other people? Whatever it is, it would be very just to give this person the death penalty. He's a cold-blooded murderer, couldn't care less, says he'd do it again, right? And why not kill him? So if the judge passed a death sentence on this guy, it would be fair. But is it really fair? Let's see. He's married to a real tzaddikus, right? He never shot anybody in the house. He never even yelled at his wife. He only shoots guys in McDonald's. His wife was never in McDonald's. Never in her life. He's an excellent husband. He takes out the garbage, right? He's really a good guy. And this woman didn't do anything wrong. She married this guy. In fact, the shadchan just forgot this little quirk in his personality. Fine guy, good midos, learns well. I just forgot this one little thing that every once in a while he goes up and shoots people in McDonald's. It happens, right? The shadchanim do work like that. So, but she never suffered from that, right? And he's a fine husband at home. It's just this one little quirk in his personality that never affected his wife. She's going to be an almana now. Is that fair? I don't think so. She's going to suffer now, losing her husband, losing her source of parnasa, losing a mate, and he was good to her. So I don't think that's fair to her. She deserves to suffer. Then he has children. He's a great father. Again, his children never went to McDonald's. He never hurt his children. He takes them on picnics, goes to Avos Ubanim with them or whatever, even stays there, and what's it called? And he's a fine father. Right? Real fine guy. And his children are going to be orphans now. Is that fair? I don't think so. He is the best worker in the factory that he works in. If he is executed, the factory is going to go bankrupt. Because they're losing their best worker. They'll never be able to replace him. Is that fair to his employer? I don't think so. So there's a lot of collateral damage over here. A lot of people that are affected by
Yeah. But then if they don't kill him or something, he'll do it again. And then he'll kill like 1,000 people.
Yeah, but he's not going to kill his wife or his children or his employee.
Employer. So he's going to kill the whole world except for them.
Okay, well, so it's, you're right, it's fair to kill him because of what damage he's going to cause other people. But the people who are suffering, who are innocent, are innocent.
Right, but everyone that he killed, they're innocent.
Yeah, okay, fine. Maybe not. They shouldn't be eating junk food. Whatever, but you're right, right? But the point is over here is that it's just. If you look, it's fair if you look at the person himself. But if you look at all the other people who are affected, for them it's not fair. You're right. Maybe in the end we have to kill them. We can't worry about his wife and his children and his employer. What's right to do is to kill this guy. He shouldn't kill other people. Shouldn't escape from jail. Shouldn't be a deterrent to other people who want to do this. But on the other hand, some innocent people are suffering, right, by his being killed. And that's not fair. That's the justice of human beings. From the way we see it, a human being can't be totally just. At least he can't consciously do it. he has to only deal, ein l'dayin ala masha ein of roach. He can only deal with the case in front of him, not all the collateral damage. But when HaKadosh Baruch Hu does mishpat, that's the chiddush. Every single person who's affected is only affected because they deserve to be affected, and only in the measure that they deserve to be affected. Meaning, if this guy is executed, right, then the Rabban Shem sees to it that his wife needed that suffering. She needed to be a widow. Why? We don't know. Not because she's a Rasha, she could be a Tzadekis. She needed that Nisai. She needed that Nisai, whatever it is, again, beyond our comprehension. And she needed it now, not 10 minutes before, not 10 minutes after. That's mind-boggling. The children needed to grow up Yisomim. What will be in their future life, because they were Yisomim, both in the future spiritually, in the future physically, in this world, that was what was necessary. Why? No way of understanding, under the Rabbanu Shel Olam. His employer needed to go bankrupt. Now. Why? We don't know. But everybody who's affected, and if they don't deserve to be affected, they won't be affected. Then what happens to this person won't affect them. Again, it's mind-boggling, because it's so many things dependent one on the other. But if a computer can do thousands, some millions of computations that depend one on the other in a second, then the Rabban Shem can do it too, because the Rabban Shem created the computer. So it's beyond our comprehension, but Lamaisa, that's the way it is. That's what it means, Ki Chol Drachav Mishpat. Okay, therefore.
This word of himself, Shlantar, is this only by Tzedek? Because I heard almost the same idea by Chesed, that when we say Shmon Esrei, Gomel Chassadim Tobim,
Twice to everything. Right, because he can guarantee that the chesed is going to be totally good, not only to this person, to every person, yes, it's across the board. Whatever it may be, it's good in every respect. But it's also MS, it's chesed, whatever it may be. There's no bad in it. It's all good. And therefore, it's all right, and it's all fair, and whatever. Okay, again, it's mind-boggling. There's no way of understanding it. But that's the fact. So if that's the case, then let's say again, Shimon is sick, and Reuven's affected by it, because Reuven is Shimon's best friend, and it bothers him that Shimon is sick. Now there has to be a reason why Reuven deserves to be bothered by that, why Shimon causes Reuven to be upset, more upset, less upset, whatever. And the Rabban Shem permits that to happen as an indirect result of Reuven's Shimon's sickness, that Reuven's affected because Reuven needs that. Now let's say Reuven davens and he changes. He doesn't deserve any more to have that discomfort from Shimon being sick. Now Shimon may still deserve to be sick, but it affects Reuven too. So the Rabban Shem is going to somehow have to change the situation to make it fair, that Reuven won't suffer anymore, and Shimon will have to get something else that won't affect Reuven. Again, that's very oversimplified, but something's going to have to change, because you don't look at each person in a vacuum. Everybody's related to other people. That's why Reb Simcha Zissel from Kelim, the author from Kelim, says the best schus you can have, he talks about Elul, Rosh Hashanah, Yom Kippur, but it applies all year round, is to be somebody who other people depend on. Because then you can't be judged only on your own merits. The Rabban Shem has to take into consideration how you affect other people. Very simple thing. Right? Somebody brings groceries to a bedridden almana, elderly woman who can't get out to shop, right, every day. Every morning he brings her groceries, her breakfast, whatever. Then comes Elul, and this guy has done terrible things this year, and the Rabban Shel Olam would like to punish him. But the good malachim come and they say, but if you punish this guy and you lay him up in bed for 6 months because that's what his neshama needs, who's going to take care of this poor almana? So you've got to find another way, Rabban Shel Olam, that will enable him not to be hindered from doing the chesed that he's doing, because this woman depends on him. So again, this is all oversimplified. This is not so, you know, so simple, right? But you get the idea. So it's good to be somebody who other people depend on. Because then your mishpat can only be on your own merits. It has to take in consideration all the other people will be affected in a negative way that they not deserve to be affected in a negative way. It also answers another thing. A medrash that you may come across, and there are similar medrashim. I can't think of any offhand now, but there are many similar medrashim. This one is one that really bothered me when I first learned it. And after coming across this idea, the medrash is simple to understand. The medrash says like this. The medrash looks for the reasons why Dina was attacked by Shechem. So medrash says it was Yaakov Avinu's fault. Because Yaakov Avinu refused to marry her to Esav. He hid her from Esav. And Lomas Mere'ehu Chesed, because if he had let Esav see her, and maybe Esav would have become enamored with Dina, and they would have made a shidduch, then maybe Dina would have been able to influence Esav and make him into a tzaddik. Okay, that needs explanation, so let's stop there for a second, because that seems absurd. Right? Yaakov Avinu has a daughter, a vulnerable daughter, and he has a brother who is a Rosh Marusha, like the arch mafioso in the world. The worst you can think of, okay? Genghis Khan, Esav, okay? And his poor little daughter, right, nice young girl, right, I don't know how old she was at the time, but she couldn't have been, she wasn't even a teenager yet. Right? Right, right, okay. Now, so you're a father or a mother, and you have to look for a shidduch for your daughter. So you say to yourself, well, Yaakov Avinu really should have tried to influence his Russia brother by marrying his tzaddikish daughter to him. So I think I'll go to the Tel Aviv bus station, find some degenerate drug addict, right, who's in a drunken stupor on the floor there, kick him and say, hey, have I got a girl for you, right? Interested in my daughter, right? She's a real tzaddikish, Beis Yaakov, well, maybe I can marry her. That's how we look for shidduchim. Because we want to do chesed for somebody that maybe, and maybe this guy will bring my daughter into a life of crime and drug addiction. How can I take a chance like that? And Yaakov Avinu was held responsible because he hid Dina and he didn't want to marry her off to Esav. Of course he shouldn't marry off to Esav. He has to protect your daughter. So the author from Slabodka says the following. He says, of course Yaakov Avinu shouldn't have married Esav to Dina, Dina to Esav. And he had to hide her away. No shy. Right, that's not the issue here. The issue is that when he put her in the box, he nailed the nails with a little bit too much enthusiasm. He should have been crying when he had to nail her into the box and say, I wish I could be mashpia on my brother, but I can't take such a chance with my daughter. But I really feel bad that I can't even attempt to try and be mashpia on my brother in this way. I wish I could, but I can't. What's the difference? The difference is, did you deprive Esav of Dina because of your concern for Dina, or because of your lack of concern for Esav? And if it was because of your lack of concern for Esav, then you deserve to be punished. Even though it's the exact same result. You're going to have to do what you did. But what was your kavana? And the onus is mida keneged mida. You think you were so concerned about your daughter's welfare and that's why you put her in the box? I'm going to show you that you weren't so concerned with your daughter's welfare because she's going to go out and get attacked and you didn't protect her there. If you're so concerned with her welfare, why didn't you step in and do things that would have prevented her from putting herself in a situation where she could have gotten attacked? You shouldn't have let her out of your sight. You shouldn't have let her go around looking in the, you know, what's it called, at the girls of the countryside, knowing that she's going to be vulnerable to who knows what out there. So if you're so concerned about your daughter and that's why you saved her from Esau, then how'd you let her go out and get attacked? Elamai, you must have not been so concerned about your daughter. You were not so concerned about Esau. So that's what it means. But in any case, so Yaakov's fault. Then the Medrash says, no, it's Leah's fault. Because Leah also was a little bit not sanua with the episode of Reuven and then Dudoyim and how she spoke to Yaakov. She spoke a little risque. And because of that, her daughter also went out, not in a tsanua way, and because of that, she was attacked. And then the Medrash says, no, it was Dina's fault. Because Dina was not so tsanua. So she invited this tragedy on herself. She was punished because she was not as tsanua as she should have been. Now, something's missing in this Medrash. Okay? We blamed Yaakov for Dina's attack. We blamed Dina for Dina's attack. And we blamed Leah. There's one player over here that wasn't mentioned. Shem. Mm-hmm. How about blaming him? Right? It's like Lahavdil, an American court or an Israeli court. That Rahman al-Islam, a woman is attacked. And who do they blame? The woman. Well, if she would have been more tzanua, she wouldn't have been attacked. Right? They blame the victim instead of blaming the perpetrator. Why isn't Shem mentioned? He's the one who did it. The answer is yes, Shem is responsible, and he got killed for it. But Shem doesn't run the world. The Ribbono Shel Olam runs the world. Why didn't God prevent Shem from being successful? Like we said, people can't guarantee that they will carry through their bad intentions. Why didn't the Ribbono Shel Olam put a gargoyle, what's it called, the shield? Anybody know what that is? Shows the age of everybody else here. The years and years ago, Colgate, toothpaste, had this thing that was like a shield around your teeth that made it impervious to, you learn a lot in this year, impervious to what's it called, to tooth decay. And it was called Gardol, G-A-R-D-O-L. Gardol, that's Colgate with Gardol. So in any case, why didn't the Ribbono Shel Olam put this Gardol shield around Dina, right? One of these electronic, what are they called, force fields, right, that would prevent Shem, or give Shem a stroke, a heart attack. Let him drop dead on the spot, right? Why give him the opportunity to be successful? So it must have been a reason why Dina didn't deserve the miracle, and she needed this trauma because of something, like we said, something that she needed corrected, and the correction was this trauma. That doesn't absolve Shem from getting punished and for being a Rasha. But the Ribbono Shel Olam permitted it to happen for a reason. And it affected Dina. That should be a reason why Dina. But it didn't only affect Dina. It affected Yaakov. He wasn't affected. His daughter was attacked. Why did he deserve to be affected his way? Not why was Dina attacked because Yaakov did something wrong. Lo yumsu avos avon. Right? If Yaakov did something wrong, let him be attacked. Why is poor daughter? But it's not to explain why Dina was attacked because Yaakov did something wrong. But why did Yaakov suffer his daughter's attack? He must have had a reason why he needed that. Why it was coming to him, not again as a punishment or whatever, as a tikkun for something that he did wrong to. He needed this. This trauma was necessary for him. Leah wasn't affected when her daughter was attacked. Of course she was. What did she do? That she deserved, that the Ribbono Shel Olam shouldn't prevent Dina from being attacked or prevent it from affecting Leah. What did she do that made it fair that she should have that trauma? Each one you need. The Medrash could have gone on and explained why it affected the Shvatim and why it affected the milkman or whatever, but it maybe didn't have reasons for all of that. It had reasons only for the ones directly in front of us. So the Medrash told us what Chazal knew. But each one is because they were affected, there had to be a reason. And if there wouldn't be a reason, then they wouldn't have been affected. Then something else would have happened. It wouldn't have happened this way. If it happened this way and it affected Yaakov, Leah, and Dina, there had to be a reason why they deserved it. And again, it doesn't necessarily mean deserved it and they got a punishment. It was a tikkun for something they needed corrected.
Okay. Using this idea to answer the question of...
Let's get to that. I have to say that. I give this year. You're step ahead of me. Okay. I did say it already?
Yeah.
Okay. So okay. So I said it already. Then fine. Yeah.
I said it since Reuben saw affects Shimon, so Shimon himself has a dominant. Therefore, his condition changes.
Right.
The male Reuben's situation would change.
Okay.
However, that would taking it to the next step then. It would only help the dominant for somebody else if there is some connection.
Good. Excellent. That's my next question. Excellent. I'll tell you what, you give this to you next week. And I'll sit there and that's exactly my next question. Okay. That makes sense if you're friendly, you're a relative, you know the condition of the person, and it really bothers you, okay? But what if, you know, look, I'm MS, right? It doesn't bother every one of us that parents are going through a tsar, and who knows what's happening to these, the soldier that was captured, and this young yeshiva boy, right? It has to bother you. Right? Some people are more adin, it bothers them more, some people less, but on the other hand, somebody gives you a name of somebody, you never heard of them. You don't even know what's wrong with them. You're just given a name to say a mishabera for them. Then how does that work? You're affected? Makes a difference to you? You feel bad? So, enachinami, the truth is, the more it affects you, the more it's going to be relevant. The less it affects you, the less it's going to be relevant. But if it doesn't affect you, l'chora, right, when the Shliach Tzibur, right, Rav Aaron says mishaberach on Shabbos, I would imagine he doesn't know kimat any of these people, or rove of them, right, the people giving him names. Now, the person could have, you know, some kind of chas v'sholem, some kind of a terminal disease, or he could have athlete's foot. You don't know why these people are saying mishaberach, right? I'm sure some of them are not for really serious situations, I would hope, okay? So, he doesn't know. So what's his mishaberach going to help, right? He's really affected because he mentions another name, somebody comes along and mentions another name in 1 second. The answer is, enachinam. Obviously, that's why the Gemara says, if you know someone who's sick, and if he's a Talmud Chacham, you have to make yourself sick over it. Because the more it affects you, the more your tefillahs are going to be affected. Because if it affects you, then, and you daven, and you become better, then it's going to help. But it works even to the slightest degree. It's the world is so precisionally fair that if there's a little bit of something that's not fair, it's going to have to be compensated for. What does that mean? If you only have 20 names mentioned by Kriyas HaTorah on Shabbos, so it takes, let's say, 20 seconds. Okay? 20 names, you have 20 seconds. If that one extra person is sick, it takes 21 seconds. That means a second later I get to my talent. Okay? If that's not fair and I don't deserve it, then something's going to have to change. If I don't deserve to get to my cholent a second later, it really depends what kind of cholent you have, right? If that's a punishment or a reward. But in any case, if I don't deserve that, to have that extra name, then that extra name's not to be taken off. Who is the extra name? Okay, that's just a marshal, right? But so it's to the precision. Enochinami, like we said, it's not Yadavin, and you get what you want. You daven, and the change is made, and everything's fine. We know that it's not the case. But it is one factor amongst millions of factors, and no matter how small the factor is, it's still a factor. It has the possibility of going into the hopper, right, the sow, of components, of factors, that could make a change, significant enough to make the thing change. That's all that we're saying. And that's true, even to the most minute, minuscule difference and pain that's not deserved. Even to that extra second of getting home to your child. Or not getting to Hag Ben Galila before, another second or something. I don't know, whatever affects you. So that is, or listening to Rav Aaron, whatever affects you, right, that's taken into the cheshbon. That's taken into the cheshbon. So that answers the question that we started with. If everything's for the good, then why do we daven that good things should change? Just because we don't realize it? Answer is, everything's for the good, but the good can come in many ways, from the most bitter to the most sweet. And when we daven, we change the situation so the good can happen in a sweeter way. That's how do you daven for other people? Either because all people are interrelated, all Jews at least are interrelated. And therefore, and it could be that you can daven for goyim too. Because all human beings are in some degree interrelated. Not interrelated the same way the Jews are interrelated, but everything in the Bria is interrelated. Maybe even they will daven for animals too. But in any case, the other idea is if you're affected by something, then you're davening for yourself. And the change in you can affect the change in somebody else because you, if you're affected by somebody else and you don't deserve it, then something has to change in that whole system. That's the second answer. There's one more question that we have to do, and we'll finish with this part of the Hakdama that we'll get to next week, but I'll just tell you the question, you think about it for a week. Okay, I understand that if the situation can change, then we done it. But what if the situation can't change? It's a fait accompli. Okay? For instance, a person dies. Okay? He's dead. We don't daven that there should be tzias hamesim for that person now. That's a miracle. That's not something we daven for. Okay? We don't go nichum aveilim and say, hold on, hopefully you'll be back. Right? We say you have to get used to the situation and life goes on, whatever we say. Okay. So that's pretty final. Why do we mourn when somebody dies? Why don't we say, well, Ribbono Shel Olam, you deem that this was the best thing under the circumstances, and therefore it's good for this person that he died. It's good for him, it's good for his wife or husband, it's good for his children, it's good for the community, it's good for everybody, because whoever's affected is affected only for the good. So ultimately, the fact that this person died when he died is the greatest thing that ever happened to him and everybody else. It's good. So why do we cry? Why do we mourn? There's nothing going to change. So accept it and be happy. What? I mean, it could have happened in a better way, right? Now, but it couldn't have happened in a better way, because that is, according to the circumstance, that can't change anymore, what happened. So accept it as the best thing under the circumstances. What you're saying is that it's under the circumstances. And even death, when a person is 120, is only under the circumstances, because it wouldn't have been for the chait of Adam and Chava, people wouldn't have died altogether, they would have gone and ascended to Gan Eden without death. So under the circumstances, we're crying for the fact that it had to happen in a bitter way instead of a sweet way. Yeah, that is a legitimate answer, rather a better answer. So you think about it for a week, and we'll see another answer.